This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Yeah, so Jund is on the comeback. Jason Clark played Jund. Is that my Jason Clark? He didn't go to Dallas-Fort Worth. This must be someone else. That's hilarious. Anyways.
There's another J. Is he better? Could you trade yours?
I don't know.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 229 of the A-Team Podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack here, joined, as always, by two of my most faithful and reliable friends, Mr. KYT, the Silent Assassin, always here in spirit, if not vocally.
Woohoo!
Boy. And I have, as always, the ever reliable, except on day two, GP, Mr. Jeremy Schofield, who I can always rely on to be here for me when I need him, unless it is the day after drink.
And to usually not make day two.
I showed up in Calgary. Jay didn't show up. I did.
This is true.
Just putting it out there.
This is very true. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I was expecting when you said your two best friends were going to be different types of alcohol, probably innocent guns.
Innis and Gun. Like to introduce you to my two best friends, Innis and Gun.
Yeah.
That's cute. No, it was not the case.
Yeah.
Could very well
have
been.
That's what I was expecting. I think very well could have been.
Yeah. So we are here. We are live, large, and in charge this week for some steaming hot A-Team action. Hopefully you guys will enjoy it as much as we enjoy delivering it to you. It was a very exciting week in Magic this week. There were four major tournaments that actually occurred this weekend. There was a team limited GP that happened in Florence, won by people that were not Peach Garden Oath, so it doesn't matter. There was also a standard GP in Singapore, which was won by number one worldwide streamer Yuki Ichikawa. And
Yuki! Ishikawa!
Canada playing actually an Abzan Megamorph build, which played three copies of Elspeth, along with, you know, the Den Protector Raptor package, along with Satyr Wayfinder, and 24 lands, which really had me kind of going for a bit, that he was playing 24 lands plus three copies of Elspeth in his main deck. It just felt like a really glaring, although, like, seems like a subtle thing. Having played a lot of both sort of like an Abzan Megamorph variant as well as Abzan Aggro, it just felt really, really strange to me. But yeah, he ended up taking it down. He beat Nemsung Wook in the semifinals, actually, who was the other, like, he was on Abzan Aggro. He was the other sort of premier player in that top eight. And ultimately ended up beating Green Red Dragons to take down. So that was pretty exciting. He had a very, very interesting deck and was very, very pleased with it in hindsight, as I understand it. And obviously he must have been streaming the shit out of it. I mean, he was basically on 24 lands. He played 61 cards, by the way, in his deck. 24
That's
lands,
what all the pros do.
61 cards. Four Thoughtseize, two Crux of Fate, four Abzan Charm, two Heroes Downfall, three Elspeth, and then four each of Wayfinder, Corsair Crucifix, Deathmist Raptor, Den Protector, Siege Rhino, and two main deck copies of Tasker the Golden Fang. So, very streamlined deck list as it pertains to his numbers. He was very clearly adamant about what cards he wanted in and out of his deck. And then as far as the sideboard goes, three copies of Irrational Cleric, three copies of Drown in Sorrow, three copies of Ultimate Price, very clearly not wanting to give up anything to the mono-red matchup, one copy of Duress, one copy of Sorin's Solemn Visitor, and two copies each of Nissa Worldwaker and two copies of Dromoka's Command. I feel like overall, deck has a lot of the tools needed to kind of win just about any matchup possible, provided that it doesn't get snagged up on the fact that it's playing 20 Pro Hands. What do you guys think of this?
I'm kind of like really out of like the metagame right now, so I don't really understand how this deck fits. Like, that's something where I know that you've been testing a lot more, like you've been really working on your Abzan list and stuff like that, so like I guess I'm more interested in where you're at.
Okay. KYT, as like a notable Abzan aggro aficionado, where's your thought process on this?
We're looking at the Ishikawa list, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm looking under the Star Cities where they have it named as Abzan Megamorph Control.
Yeah.
As their title for the name. I'm just comparing it to Lucas's list really quick.
So like, as far as that comparison goes, he's just playing Wayfinders and Raptors. And instead of
no Bile Blights.
Yeah,
and
no Read the Bones.
No Fleece Mane Lions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm generally not a fan of Satyr Wayfinder in this type of deck. Like the style of deck that requires on basically trying to maximize the power of your synergy. Because I think if you draw the wrong end of it, I'm usually not a fan of that. Where Wayfinder here is like helping with your Raptor and Protector and your Tasker plan, helping fuel those. I just rather have like a card that's like stronger overall in Fleece Mane Lion. But and then the rest of the deck is pretty standard. And so I'd have to play a bunch of games to see if the synergy is actually worth the fact that Wayfinder is just a dumb 1/1. That's sure. About it.
Okay.
I mean, that's how, like, in my most recent PTQ win, it's been a while now, it's been like a set ago, but I was winning. I had the more classic Abzan control deck, whereas my opponents were pajamming like four Wayfinders and possibly four Caryatids, some versions, and I just felt I had an edge based on having more steam than my opponent, but. Here we got with Raptor and Protector, it's not like you're necessarily losing a card when you play Wayfinder, in fact that you might just be gaining it back. So that would be the difference. And yeah, it's an intriguing list. It's probably pretty strong and definitely something that I'll have to prepare against heading into Providence.
So you are going to GP Providence?
I am very likely going to GP Charlotte and GP Providence.
GP Charlotte, wow. Also?
Yeah.
Wow.
KYT is Max Baller, because then, yeah, you've also got Vegas, and, oh, geez, man, you're going to be everywhere.
Yeah, well, I've taken a pretty big playing break from Magic recently, so I'm going to come back strong to put me back into Pro Tour Vancouver shape. So I'm going to do all these events to get back into play mode. Like a lot of times it was just still need to learn how to not make a play that, or forget to make a play that a line that I saw and then just totally last minute switch. So there's a lot of things that, you know, I want to iron out in terms of rust and stuff like that. So I'm excited and very excited to, for Vegas, of course, and that's going to be the first event I've played since Toronto, and it's been a while since I've played since Toronto, so I haven't played a lot of high-level Magic, so looking forward to that. And so far for Providence, of course, I'm most excited about the sort of deck that people are considering the breakout deck, which is played by Yuya, Mahara, and all that, and excited to know what Scott thinks of that deck.
Yeah? You're interested in the Dragons deck? What do they call it? Dragon Megamorph? So this is a list that is 4 Den Protector, 4 Wayfinder, 4 Caryatid, 3 Courser, 4 Raptor. So it's very much a green deck, right? You then look at the removals and interaction suite, which is 3 Thoughtseize, 2 Foul Tongue Invocation, 2 Heroes Downfall, 1 Murderous Cut. And then you're into the beef. The beef. And here you've got, like, 3 copies of Ojutai, 2 copies of Dromoka, 2 copies of Silumgar, and 1 copy of Atarka. All of these, of course, being the Dragon's version, not the Fate Report version. So they're all Dragon Lords. So you've got this, like, 27 creature, 3 sorcery, 5 instant deck with 25 lands, 4 of which are Havens of the Spirit Dragon. And the idea, I guess, is that you ramp out to early Dragon Lords and destroy your opponent while still maintaining some measure of resiliency with the Den Protector, Deathmiss Raptor, Satyr Wayfinder engine. Like, maxing out on Havens makes a lot of sense if you're on a Satyr Wayfinder plan, because you kind of, like, sometimes you mill over your dragons and you can just, like, pull them back and put them back in the game and cast them.
Yeah, and a lot of the complaints for me was the Esper Dragons deck was that the mana was horrible.
Yep.
Gerard Fabiano cut all the Havens, which is like, which I'm still not sure of if I'm on his side of the argument or not, because Haven is an insanely powerful card, because sometimes you really need to bring back an Ugin even to win the game.
Yeah.
But here, of course, you have more reasons to play 4 Havens than in that deck, so. Excited, and like you said, mostly green guys. So, and you got your black spells, but mostly green, and then you got the Havens to help you play all your dragons. So, this looks sweet. Again, it has that. I'm excited. I haven't played. It's been a while since I'll play. I actually have never played since this combo has existed. 4 Wayfinders and 4 Caryatids in the same deck, because, as always, I'm worried about the threat density of it all. But this one has me very excited, because it combines the 2 cards that people think, or at least Jerry T thinks, are the best cards in the format, and Ojutai and Den Protector. So
the only issue I have with taking these results as gospel about the deck quality is that the 2 pilots that placed real well with it were Makihito Mahara and Yuya Watanabe. Like, without any sort of question, 2 of the greatest players that could have possibly been playing in that Grand Prix. And they placed 10th and 11th of the list. Exactly the same 75. So, I don't know, it's tough for me to kind of be like, yeah, the deck's insane, look how well it did, when you have to consider that the pilots are Stone Cold Masters. Like, Stone Cold Masters. I mean, Flores won his RPTQ with like mono blue this strategy, right? And so this is basically that same idea, except replacing the blue cards with green ones, which are arguably better.
Yeah, like the 2 best 2 card combo that there is right now in Den Protector and Raptor.
Right. So it kind of gives you that built-in insulation against being stone dead to Crux of Fate. So, I don't know. It may be good, it may not be, it may be amazing, it may be a flash in the pan. I really don't actually know. Just by looking at it, it seems like it could be fine, but, you know, you may have some challenges against red. I mean, I guess that's... The sideboard doesn't look like it addresses that all too well. You've got multiple copies of Foul Tongue Invocation, which is probably good. You can go up to 4 courses, which is arguably good. You've got some Bio Blights and Ultimate Prices and Drowns, but... So I guess maybe the matchup's fine, but... I don't know. It just seems like, can the deck possibly be good with that little interaction? Can it?
No, I agree with you about the results. Just like, we've got my friend Pascal Menard doing insane when he goes to these non-American GPs. So I'm with you there when it comes to taking these results, you know, with that perspective in mind.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that said, I mean, when you consider, you know, the top 16, you had those 2, and then you also have Nam Sung Wook and Yuki Ichikawa, like, which are basically, like, when you wrap them up, that is, like, four of the top potential six players in that end of the world that could possibly attend this Grand Prix. And, like, four of six of them make fucking top 16. So, I don't know, like, maybe it's just skill, but maybe the deck's fine. Like, I don't know, it's interesting because, like, so when you consider the results of the SCG this weekend, so SCG was in Dallas-Fort Worth. It was a standard standard event. And as an example, like, Jerry T, who just won the Mox qualifier last weekend with Abzan Ambro.
Sean McLaren top-aided that one.
Top-aided or just shy, yep. And I actually asked him about his list, too. He was playing an Abzan Megamorph variant. And I asked him about the list, and he actually said to me...
He copied Namsum Wolf.
No. I asked him, I'm like, the list looks pretty sweet. Wonder after playing it if there are any changes you'd like to make. I like a lot of what's going on and trust your instincts. And he's like, I think the list is great for an Esper Dragons metagame, but I didn't play against it. I'd want to shore up the Abzan aggro matchup, and mastery isn't great there, but I'm not sure if it just means playing more of a normal Abzan control. So that was his 2 cents. But anyways, my point is that Jerry ended up playing as well, basically revised his Abzan aggro list, took it out to Dallas-Fort Worth, and as I understand it, was able to draft both Todd Anderson and Anthony Lowry to both play sort of the list, the full 75. And Jerry made a couple changes, not the least of which was cutting the Sorin Solemn Visitor from the list, in order to play two main deck copies of... So he upped the count of Wingmate Rocks, which was kind of to be expected, I think, after, you know, after the most recent swings in the metagame. I think going back to multiple copies of Wingmate Rock is what Abzan Aggro needs to do to win, especially when Elspeth becomes more of a relevant thing. But some of the most notable changes that they made was they added two copies of Heir of the Wilds to the deck, which is just like another 2-drop, so it went up to like 10 2-drops. And then the sideboard has changed a little bit to add, like 3 copies of Hornet Nest and the 4th Wingmate Rock, and 2 copies of Tazuka the Golden Fang. So on top of that, you've got some fairly utility spells, including like Anissa, and then, you know, your standard, pretty standard stuff like Drowned Duresses, Glares, and Self-Inflicted Wounds. But he ended up placing 22nd with the list, and the interesting piece about it is Namsung Wook also had 2 Heir of the Wilds in his deck, although decided not to issue the Sorin completely. So it's very interesting. It's clear that either they work together on the lists, or that they were very obviously coming to the same places in the metagame, and it could just have been a function of how the matchups ended up breaking down. Like for Jerry, for example, who plays 22nd versus Namsung Wook's like top his semifinal loss. So I don't know. It's very interesting. I think there's a lot going on in Abzan Aggro, and then you go up to like the 9th place list, Edward Eng from the Star City event, and he's playing like 2 Wardens, and he's playing more of like the BBD version. And then you take a look at the 3rd place list by Gabe Joglar, and he's on like a main deck Tazigar. He's keeping the Sorins. Like, it's pretty crazy. There's a lot of like these subtle things that are going on, and I think it really depends on, you know, what you're prepared to hedge against, and a couple of cards can make all the difference in the world. So Abzan Aggro is still one of the more powerful linear strategies in the format. And I think that with the addition of Dromoka's Command, it really, really fleshes out a lot of what the deck's capable of handling. I think that it truly is the Jund of the format, in that it's got like a 50 or 55% win percentage against basically anything in the field.
So are you like preferring like the Namsum Wook list, or do you kind of like where some of the other guys are going? Like,
I'm really unsure at this point, to be perfectly honest. Like what I think I like is, like I like bits and pieces of everybody's lists, right? Like I like so-and-so's main deck, and I like some of what's going on the sideboard here, and I like some of what's going on the sideboard there, but I like these other cards. And so if I were to take a look at my list that I have sleeved up, I'm basically on, I think, like, Namsung Wook's main deck, with the exception of I cut the Valorous Dance for the 26 land.
Okay.
So that's what I did for the main deck. And then as far as the sideboard goes right now, I'm looking at one Jamoka's Command, one Sorin, two Elspeth, one Nissa, and then two Ultimate Price, two Duress, three Self-Inflicted Wound, one Glare of Heresy, and two Drowned in Sorrow. And that's what I have basically in place right now. I really like Elspeth as a sideboard card, especially if I'm going to be playing the 26 lands. I feel like it gives me a much better game against like red-green dragons and those, and like devotion decks, because you have that reset button. And I just, maybe it's just me, but I've been like roasted and burned way too often on, you know, against those types of decks where they're able to just like jam, you know, all these big fatties, and I have no answer. So I kind of like that, and like having Elspeth for that. And, you know, she plays well with a bunch of the other cards that I'm playing already. So I think that's where I'm at with it right now. And then whether or not I decide to stay there, or whether I go towards more of a Gabe Joglar list, where I'm looking at, you know, like playing a copy of Tazigar instead of the Heir of the Wilds, moving the second Sorin into the main deck. Like, if that's where I end up being, then those are sort of the flex slots that I have in mind, I think, right now for the archetype.
See, it's really funny, because like the way that, if you like follow the sideboards and just, you know, like the little bit that we've been talking, even just kind of going over these lists that we have here, it really seems like people are not respecting the mono red decks anymore. And is this going to be like, you know, that dredge thing where dredge is only good when nobody respects it? Is like mono red going to be the deck to play at the next standard event because all these sideboards are just getting away from it?
So what's interesting about that discussion point is, and I was very much in this school, like, going into Grand Prix Toronto, I actually was like over prepared for mono red, right? Like I actually like over respected it. I was playing Surge of Righteousness in the sideboard instead of Self-Inflicted Wounds because, you know, I wanted a card that killed Siege Rhino, but also was like supremely good against mono red, you know, and that sort of thing. And it wasn't until I actually made the change to add Sorin to the main decks that I really started to realize that it's actually fine. Like, Abzan Aggro is actually one of the better matchups against mono red, because if you have even just like one or two of your sideboard cards, like if you get one Drown in Sorrow or a Bile Blight, you know, it's very easy for you to just, you know, undo a lot of the damage that has been done by the deck. And then your creatures are enormous. And, you know, through some combination of like Siege Rhinos, Jamoka's Command, and Sorin, even Wingmate Rock, you know, now in the main deck, you can very easily turn the tide and get your opponent fucking dead before they have a chance to like come back. So not only can you gain enough life very often to kind of gain a couple turns back, but you're able to shorten the clock on them very quickly because your creatures are just so enormous.
Okay.
So I think like as far as Abzan Aggro is concerned, I think in a lot of scenarios there was a lot of overboarding that was happening before, and I think that it really depends on whether or not you're playing like the multiple mana confluence version, or, you know, how that all shakes up. But as far as your susceptibility to mono red. But I agree. Like, it's interesting because, like Esper Dragons has supposedly an abysmal mono red matchup. But, I mean, when you play four copies of Sack a Guy, Gain Four Life, I can't see how it's all that bad. And when you ask Kane and that sort of stuff about, like, their Pro Tour experience, and, I mean, I recognize the source is insane, but, you know,
it is insane, Hane.
Yeah, see what I did there? But they basically, like, they don't, you know, he was like, I don't lose to mono red. Like, you just don't. You just play well, and you don't lose. So, I don't know, man. It's an interesting discussion point, but I think that in the grand scheme of things, it depends on the matchup. But I agree with you. Like, Abzan Aggro seems to be, you know, if they are playing Sorins, they definitely, or Boblites, or both, they're admittedly trimming down on what is perceived to be sort of specific mono red hate.
One question is, has Esper Dragons actually disappeared? Because I don't see it in SCG top 16 or the top 8 of the Shanghai GP.
It's still being played fairly heavily, but it's kind of receded to sort of like one of the top 5 archetypes, if not top 7 archetypes, that are being played on a tournament. I think that it's going to be one of those decks where it is absurdly powerful, and a capable pilot will be rewarded with, you know, a flexible and consistently tuned 75 that is designed to prey upon, you know, holes in the minigame, right? Like, I feel like Elspeth right now is just doing a really good job of trying to hold out sort of Abzan aggro, but definitely by extension than the Abzan Megamorph decks, which naturally are very, very good against, you know, the Esper strategies. And sort of once we kind of continue to come full circle and Megamorph becomes good again, then we're going to see, you know, we're going to see more as things go on of some changes in the metagame.
Nice. I mean, I still have it in my back pocket. Depending on how I feel, the metagame will shift in time for Providence, so.
In the back pocket? You don't want to share with us? Give us all your secrets, KYT.
I have none right now.
Tell me what deck to play.
I mean, Scott is definitely in a better position to recommend something at this point.
Oh yeah, but you just have metagame all figured out.
Like, I'm pretty sure that I would. I mean, like, going to a tournament tomorrow, I'm going to play some version of Abzan aggro. Like, absolutely, I am. Just because it's got some of the best matchups around, but at the same time, I've got a lot of experience with the archetype, which I think is something that's also really relevant. Like, I think Standard right now, there's just so many different decks you can play, and I think what matters is just being proficient with one of them, and understanding what you're up against, and having a game plan against it. You know, having a well-tuned version of whatever you're playing is probably going to be more effective. Now that said, what you're playing should probably include some numbers of some of the following cards: Dragonlord Ojutai, Siege Rhino, Den Protector, Deathmist Raptor, Thoughtseize. Period. That, like,
no love for Coco?
So the Coco decks are interesting, and they're potentially very unreliable, inconsistent. No matter how much people want to throw math at you, but I mean, they seem to be the new hotness right now. So I guess you kind of have to decide what version you want to play. Whether you're looking at green white, whether you're looking at Abzan, whether you're looking at Teemer, there's all sorts of different ones that are out.
I kind of like the Teemer one just because 4/4s for 3 seems really good, but I just don't think it's a real deck.
Yeah.
Like, how do you get past Den Protector and Deathmist Raptor? Like, the cards are just so good.
Agree. Now, that said, like, Isaac Rembert placed 18th of Teemer Dragons at the SUG event this past weekend.
Yeah.
And he was running 4 copies of Mystic, 3 Elvish Mystic, 3 copies of Rattleclaw Mystic, 4 Knuckle Blades, 2 Surok, 3 Boon Satyr, 4 Stormbreath, 4 Thunderbreaks, and then, like, 2 copies of Sunken Unbroken, 2 copies of Reveler, 3 Claws, 3 Denial, 2 Roar. So, I don't know. I mean, it seems fine, but it definitely seems like you're just basically looking to try to get Hasty Dragons up in the air and then finish them off with Greater Claws.
I'm so far away from this format right now that, like, everything just looks... I look at a deck and I don't understand how it plays against another deck. Like, I always felt like before I would have an idea of, like, okay, what cards are important. Like, I don't know what cards are important in the matchups anymore. Like, I'm so far out of it. What are you testing on your show lately? Are you doing Standard on your show? Or are you doing Modern on your show?
I've been doing Modern. Like, last week I did Modern just because with Standard Super League being a thing on Tuesdays, it just makes more sense for me to stream Wednesdays, Thursdays. Based on the timing that I'm streaming, it's Modern Dailies, which seems to be where I'm at. So I have been, like, admittedly, I've been playing a lot more Moto online. A lot more Modern online. But as far as, like, paper and paper prep goes, it's 100% Standard.
Okay. Yeah, maybe Standard Super League is the thing to watch or something like that. I don't know. It's so hard to watch.
Really?
I love what they're doing. It's just the quality seems, like, just atrocious.
Explain, please. I'm not arguing with you. I'm not looking to, like, tell you you're an idiot, but I'm very curious as to what you're seeing that is, you know, communicating that to you.
Okay, so I've been watching it on YouTube.
Sure.
Like, I don't watch it live.
Yep.
Yeah. And it seems like they're always having audio issues. It seems like they don't have the hands completely shown. It's just... you can't tell what's going on with like selections or anything like that. It's just like there's a lot of like things that I feel like I should be able to see that I can't see, and it just really bothers me, and it just makes me irate. And I know that I'm blowing it out of proportion, but it's still just, it's frustrating that like they've kind of like got this whole thing that they're throwing their name behind, but they're just not, it just doesn't feel like the guys who are actually shooting it have the support from WotC that they should.
Huh. All right.
So that's my thoughts on it. It's a little too Bush League for their name to be thrown on it. Like they've got the lineup. The lineup's insane. They've got, you know, right people doing commentating and stuff like that. Like the way that they do that is great. It's just, it doesn't seem like the technology's there.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Like I would rather watch videos done like on, you know, like people just doing like regular moto videos, or I would rather watch old coverage of like paper tournaments than watch Standard Super League.
But really? Like
Standard Super League, yeah. Standard Super League at least is like relevant to current times. Like it's somewhat, you know, new meta, current meta, that kind of stuff, which is a reason to watch it over other things.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But like I'd rather watch like an SCG replay or something like that, like SCG coverage. So yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think that there's a lot going for it one way or the other. And you need to be aware of what's actually happening. So I don't blame you for that.
Yeah, hey, well, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like the coverage for the mocks this weekend had a lot of the same problems where you couldn't see people's hands completely. You couldn't see choices that they were making. You couldn't see revealed cards. You couldn't see a bunch of things that were just, I don't know why not. Like, why are we doing it this way?
Yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of the mock coverage because, again, it was just a case of, there was just a lot of basic stuff that should have been there that they just failed to achieve. So.
Well, that is certainly some interesting points to bring up. It's something that
I didn't play any Magic this week. Well, I played some Tempest online or whatever. The Tempest drafts. I did a few of those.
How is that going?
It's fun. You know, it's like playing with old school things where it's like, oh, that guy's got 4 toughness. This card's a bomb. It's like, oh, that's a 3/3 for 4. I got to eat that one up. I want that. That card's going to win fights with everything. So it's going back in the day where creatures are absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So a 5 mana flyer that you can sacrifice to do 2 damage to all creatures, and it comes back. You can return from your graveyard during your upkeep.
With recurring like 3 mana.
Yeah. Yeah, is like freaking the bomb.
Yeah.
When it really shouldn't be.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So.
Yeah, so I spent most of the weekend hanging out with Lily. Lily and I went to the face-to-face game store in Toronto. And I decked her all out in her face-to-face games shirt.
And I was going to ask if she was wearing her gear.
Put on her little orange face-to-face games t-shirt, which allowed her to have the full face-to-face games billboard.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. And we went down just basically to hang out. I mean, I'd been watching Wingmate Rocks dominate all weekend and couldn't help but notice that face-to-facegames.com had Wingmate Rocks for like 3 1/4. So I decided I would call the shop and see if they had any in stock and that I would go down there and buy them out.
So, you think that card's going to be worth more than 3 1/4?
So, that card...
Are you MTG financing?
I am hashtag MTG financing. If you take a look at the price history of Wingmate Rock, it's really, really high. Like, it was easily a $20 Mythic Grand Pro Tour Consitark here. And then it dropped a little, and now it's, like, dropped again. And I think that now it's on the rise in terms of play. You're looking at Abzan Aggro lists, and all of them have 2 to 4 Wingmate Rocks in the 75. And I think that that's just very quickly leading us back to the area that we were at before, where KYT can attest to that, like, basically, raiding a Wingmate Rock became how you win the game. especially in the Abzan aggro
mirror. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I feel like we're headed back there, and even if they like double in price, I feel like I'm doing okay. So, yeah, but Lily got treated like a princess. It was great. She got to sit at the bar, and she got a lemonade, and she was given...
Did she get a mealing?
She didn't get a mealing. She's not even four. I got a...
She can't handle it?
I know. I got a Behemoth Club with a special Scotty Mac salad, so that was cool. And
what is special Scotty Mac salad? Is it on the menu? Do you have your own salad?
No, I don't have my own salad on the menu.
Because I would love to toss that salad.
I bet you would love to toss my salad. But ultimately, Alex was there. He was working the kitchen instead of Anthony. And Alex knows what's going on. He knows what's up. So normally it's a Caesar salad, but I don't like Caesar dressing. And I don't like coleslaw generally. And he's like, well, I could make you... You love the spicy mayo. I can make you a Caesar with spicy mayo instead of dressing. And I'll like toss it for you and stuff. And I'm like, yes. So they make their homemade, like their own spicy mayonnaise using like absurd hot sauces. So it's actually got some kick for the low volume and it's quite delicious. So I opted instead to have that.
Okay.
And it was quite delicious. But so I had a Behemoth Club with the Scotty Mac salad. Lily ended up getting a final table or whatever the hell they call it. And it's basically this like giant double chocolate chip cookie warmed in the microwave. And then they put a bunch of cookies and cream ice cream on it with chocolate sauce, whipped cream, and chocolate chips.
Okay.
So I gave Lily one of those and like my life ended. Because it was a severe overload of sugar. But thankfully, I was able to throw her in a car and drive her home. So, but yeah, it was a great little weekend. We had ourselves a really good time. We came back, and Alana came home later that day, and I went out. We just went shopping for some stuff at the, like, window browsing in the strip malls, and got home, and here we are. So it was pretty busy day. Alana was out for the weekend. I had the Lily and I, so we had a good time. And I wish I could have played more Magic, but I just tragically did not. I had to spend all of my weekend watching it. But
shucks.
Yeah. The one thing that I did find, though, is that Modern is quickly becoming a fucking nightmare for me.
Why?
Well, I don't know if you've heard the word, but Jund is returning to sort of like...
Jundstice!
Top tier Modern deck?
Jundstice.
Yeah. I actually blame Kolaghan's Command, which makes me like extra grossly sick because I kept saying that that card was hot fucking trash. But when you're using it to...
I still think you feel the same way.
When you're using it to return Fulminator Mages and make your opponents discard a card or deal 2 damage to a creature or something that they have, then it gets really, really gross. You know, so all of a sudden I'm like drawing a Kolaghan Command and I'm sacrificing my Fulminator Mage to destroy my opponent's Celestial Colonnade, at which point in time I use Kolaghan's Command at end of turn to make them discard a card of the 4 that they have in hand and return my Fulminator Mage to my hand and then replay it and continue to wreak devastation upon my opponent. It's super gross.
But see, that's actually the thing that I like I enjoy that kind of line of play. I enjoy people not getting to play Magic.
I'm sorry to hear you're a degenerate.
Like, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Way less of fun.
Like, I was thinking about trying to like Coco online, but I might just have to do this online. Although I got rid of my Goyce online, so... That just seems like a mistake.
Yeah, that's a huge mistake.
I wonder if Goyce will drop online like when Modern Masters is doing its thing. Probably. That'll probably be the cheapest they get again.
How low did they drop last time? Was it like 120?
No, they were sub 100.
Really?
Online.
Really?
Yeah, they were like 80.
Wow. That is absolutely the basement. I do not expect them to drop below 100.
They're like that high right now?
Well,
I'm going to look.
As a matter of fact, if I take a look at Chaz Andre's list from last weekend, And he talked about Modern Masters 2015.
Oh, no, they're selling for $60 online right now.
Tarmogoyf is selling for $60 online?
Yep.
A future site Tarmogoyf is going for anywhere from $175 to $200.
Are these paper or are these paper. Online?
Paper. Modern Masters, yeah. Modern Masters yeah. is $200.
Yeah, future site ones are going crazy now because we're getting more of the new art.
Ah.
So the old art is actually becoming, like, rare.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, English
okay.
English non-foil future site is not listed, but Japanese...
$20.
Japanese is $229.99.
Yeah. I think my game plan is to start trying to get foil Tarmogoyfs.
You think?
Yeah.
Seems
I think
like
that's
a perfectly
the next
serviceable answer, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the game plan right now. I've been foiling out a whole bunch of other modern things right now, so I figure if I'm going to go, I should go big.
That's pretty big.
And, yeah, and, like, the good people at Face-to-Face Games are good people to support, so.
It's true.
Let's go see. What do they got? Tarmogoyf. Foil. Modern Masters. $479. That's money bucks. $224 for the English one. For non-foil. $800 for a foil future site.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yep, it is.
$479. I think the $479, that number's got to come down. It's going to move. It should move. Maybe it'll move.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'll wait till Vegas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm like super upset I can't go. It's terrible.
You should go.
I can't go.
Why?
So I won't be in the country. I can't go.
Oh, who do I need to call bomb threat to?
Yeah, no. Not telling.
No? Okay.
No.
Can I pretend to be some, like, big swinging, like company, like, oh, I want to get thousands of phones, but I need to do my business transactions in Las Vegas. Send me your scottiest employee to negotiate.
That'd be pretty impressive if that actually worked.
Yeah. And then we would have to find some whale to get to buy a whole bunch of phones who only deals in Vegas because I can't buy the phones.
Yeah, that's real awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should just make like A-Team Incorporated and get all of our listeners who want a sick phone deal together and do a group buy.
Yeah. Yeah. MassDrop.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, it would be like a thing like that. Like, we can't get any merch, so maybe we can get these people fucking cell phone deals at the very least.
That's funny. That's pretty funny.
Post in the comments if you want cheap cell phones. We're going to make this happen.
So, did you play Magic this weekend, Jer?
I did not. Aside from just, like, Tempest Online and that kind of stuff. Like, just I did some Moto stuff. Thursday night, we went... the community that I bought my house in, they're doing all kinds of like community centric stuff. So one of the things they have is a big like outdoor community garden space. So we had signed up for it, put our names on the waiting list, and they actually called us and said, yeah, somebody canceled. You got a spot. So I've got like this 20 by 20 plot that I have to fill with vegetables. And I've never gardened before in my life. My wife has no idea about gardening. Honestly, the person who has the most gardening experience in this house is my daughter, Petra, because she goes out and shovels dirt around in her grandmother's yard, my wife's mother's garden. So we went out and we paid for this plot and we had all this dirt and we had to figure out what to do with it. To put on top of things, my wife had invited somebody to come stay with us for the weekend and had forgotten. So that person showed up.
Yeah.
And then we also had to plan for our first big like shindig in the house because we'd had a couple people over here and there, but like we were having our first real house party.
Sure.
Kind of like a housewarming months after we've moved in. So a lot of prep for that. I had to put stuff up on the walls. I had to do a bunch of like stuff around the house. Yeah. So it was just like silly prep. I like bought new TV, Costco, all this kind of stuff to try and like get everything all set up. We still have folding chairs because buying chairs is stupid.
Yeah.
Although I should just buy the frickin' chairs. I know they're stupid expensive, but like whatever. I just throw money at the problem and hope I still have money when I'm done.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really, I think, the game plan.
Well,
and then, yeah, cleaning.
Like, my room is a mess. My desk here is just awful right now. I've got a sorted dragon set. I've got an unsorted fate set. I've got random cards. Like, my brother-in-law was over looking for stuff for his cube.
Yep.
And, like, we just pick up, like, a random pile of cards on the floor, and there's a Jace the Mind Sculptor in it. Like, just,
no
like,
way.
Casually, like, I've just got shit everywhere, so I've got to find some time to take care of this, but I just haven't.
Yeah.
And it's because, like, every day's off, I've just been plans. I've got Vegas the next day's off, so the wife and I are just like, you know, sometime in June, we're going to have a weekend off, and we're not going to do anything. It's going to be fantastic.
For you?
Yeah, so that was kind of like the big thing. Like, Saturday was all just prep for the party, or Sunday was all prep for the party. It was my wife's birthday and stuff like that. And today was, I spent the whole day out at the garden. My arms are like as red as a Coke can because I burnt like a crisp. And I just, yeah.
And you're
went and bought plants.
You're a ginger.
Yes, I'm not a ginger, but partial I'm ginger. Ginger-ish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, partial. It's great, though, because, like, most of the people who have, like, the gardens, like, the people who run it and stuff like that are old people. And it's funny because, like, you know, we've talked about, like, including people in Magic and trying to be an inclusive environment. And just going there and spending the day trying to do gardening with these people, they're a very exclusive group. Like, I get there and I've got like these tomato plants and all these other plants, and this lady's looking at me, all of your stuff's gonna die. I'm like, oh, well, geez. And she's like, if you leave this out overnight, all this stuff's gonna die. You're gonna come back and it's gonna be dead tomorrow. And I'm looking at her and it's like, you know, I could say the same for you, how old you are. But
oh, God.
I didn't want to go there, you know, like that would have been really rude. But I was like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm first timer, never done any of this stuff. And she's like, well, you're just wasting your time. I'm like, oh, okay, well, thanks, lady. They got this big shed full of tools and everything like that, and everybody's going in there. But since I'm not over 50, when I go in there, it's like, you have to bring your own tools. You can't borrow everything.
Oh, God.
Like, oh, okay. Well, that's why I brought my shovel and all this other stuff. I didn't have a hose. They said that they had hoses here. I figured I'd be okay. And then some guy tried to hustle me out of my spot after I did all the work. He's like, oh, yeah, no, this slot's not for you. They was a big mix-up. Well, look your name on the list and try and find out where you're supposed to be, because the spot that I ended up getting was, like, right off the main path. Like, it's actually some, like, prime real estate that I got. Like, there's a bunch of really crappy plots, but I've got one, like, that's, like, just perfect, like, for positioning and everything.
Yeah.
So this guy's, like, giving me a hard time, and I'm like, okay, well, I gave you money. I was told this was my plot. If you look at the list, every plot's got a name next to it except for the one that I have, and my name's not on the list anywhere. And he's like, well, I'm going to go get the other list just to be sure. So I'm sitting there just like shaking my head, like, who is this guy trying to hustle me off? And then he finally figures out, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, it's probably yours. It's probably yours. Who did you talk to? I'm like, well, yeah, the guy who's in charge of this row. He's like, oh, yeah, that guy is in charge of this row. He knows what's going on. I'm like, yeah, I figured. That's why I gave him money and he gave me a receipt. What's your problem?
Nice.
And he's like, well, you know, we're just trying to move things around because we have too many Chinese. What? So a buddy's like, talking about how the Chinese are going to steal my shovels and how the Chinese are going to steal this and how the Chinese can't be trusted and the Chinese just grow nonstop kale. And I'm just looking this guy like, who are you? Like,
oh God,
just like old school racism, like just terrible. And every time I like walk by, like, yeah, the little old lady type thing like that, I went and I bought a whole bunch of plants that have already like budded. Like I went and bought like the starter plant type things and I planted all of those. So the lady who's sitting there, she looked at me, she's like, oh, well, your garden's all done. You got an instant garden. And I'm like, you're such a bitch. So, yeah, gardening's fun.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No.
Shout out, though, to, like, my wife's cousin's son, who didn't come to our, like, triple joint birthday. Because, yeah, my birthday is next weekend. My wife's birthday was yesterday, the day of the party, and my daughter's birthday was the week before. So we had like all three parties celebrated in one birthday. And this kid who like, you know, like I've dated my wife forever. So I used to babysit him and everything like that. He's a cool kid, but he's like a teenager now and he didn't want to come. And he sent a text to his mom that he didn't want to come because we would just be talking about the economy and mortgage prices.
Yikes.
And, like, that was the actual text he sent his mom, and she showed me. So, like, just kudos to you, Connor. I don't think you listened to the show, but I thought that was really a choice coming from you. So, yeah. I can't wait to see what Rhinoceros has to say about this. That's actually becoming one of my favorite things to show like release day is the Rhino summary in the comments. So shout out to Rhino. Although he changed his name now to something. What's his name now? Do you know?
Oh, I think it's Crucible Words on.
Crucible of Words. Yeah.
Brendan.
Oh, is that who it is on Twitter?
Yeah, huge shout out to him.
Oh, sweet. And I'm clicking my pen again and I'm driving somebody crazy. Probably Kyle. I love you, Kyle. Don't smite me. So, what else is going on here, Magic card-wise? Yeah, Modern Masters boxes, everyone seems to be high on those. I don't think I would ever buy one. Like, I don't know if you guys have been looking at it, like, hashtag MTG Finance again, but, like, the prices are just ridiculous. Like, I don't know what they're going for in your guys' neck of the woods, but, like, the cheapest ones we're seeing is, like, $325 a box.
Hmm.
Like, I would be hard-pressed to pay more than, like, I think MSRP on it is supposed to be, like, $250 or $270 or something like that, and I don't even know if I would be happy paying for that price. I think I would hesitate to take it at that price.
Really? Like how much would it have to be for you?
I think at $225, I'd be really happy. But I think anything above that, like, it's so bomb-heavy. That, like, if you just open up bad mythics, like, I think you just, like, vomit away all your money. It's like Tarmogoyf or bust.
I'm trying to find the MSRP on these things. I'm seeing every box contains 24 booster packs, and each booster pack is $10. So I would assume it's $240 would be the MSRP.
And is that American or is that Canadian?
Oh, that's American.
Yeah, so that's like $270 Canadian, and it just, or way more than that still. That would be like almost $300 Canadian?
Yeah, right now, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it's about 20%-ish, right? So $190, $185, $190, somewhere around there. Just be so hard to like get your value back in the box. It does look like a fun set, though, to like draft and stuff like that. Like, I think Sealed's going to be really odd.
Probably do a draft or two in Vegas, and that will be my Modern Masters experience for the most part. I didn't touch much of the first one either, outside of playing in the Vegas event, and then I think I won maybe like half a box or a box in an event or two, and used those. As sort of a draft, or then there's like friends who are willing to like pitch in, like get a bunch of people to pitch in for a box so that we could like draft it without one person having to buy the whole thing. So, you know, stuff like that will probably happen again for this one. And I don't know.
I'm like trying to figure out like what the archetypes are going to look like. Like, I feel like there's like a Soul Shift deck or something like that. Like, I know that there's only a couple commons with it and stuff like that, but. If you nail like a couple nameless inversions, like that card Soul Shift becomes really, really good.
Yeah.
Because bringing back nameless inversion with Soul Shift seems like completely unfair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Modern Masters is this weekend, right? Release is actually this weekend. Have you guys been doing any preparation leading into Vegas?
I am part of a Facebook group and I just haven't done anything really with it. Like, I actually feel pretty lame that I haven't been doing any of their sealed things or anything like that.
So there's some pretty good sealed emulators that are out there that do a pretty good job of replicating the common-uncommon algorithms. And a bunch of people have been placing them online. Like, well, they're better than anything else other than, you know, cracking the pack yourself.
Yeah, like, but it's a matter of, like, can you get, like, without the boxes being out, you don't know what the common runs are going to look like.
Right.
So.
But I mean, like, you basically have the same chances. Like, a common is X to 1, and the uncommon's, you know, Y to 1, and rares was Z to 1, that sort of thing, right? But yeah, so there's a couple of good ones out there. I mean, Paul Cheon just finished a 24-hour stream, and on that stream he was, like, welcoming people to, you know, basically create their own sealed pools through one of the sealed pool generators, and then build the deck on Magic Online and then challenge Paul. So he was like letting people do that all day. And
wow.
Yeah, so they are out there. They are operating fairly well. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what that actually looks like. I've got I'll actually be at Face-to-Face Games in Toronto all day for the release event. And I'll be there from like 11 o'clock on. So I think Matt Mealy and I are going to end up doing like a CVM BBD style versus video with a sealed deck as well. And we're going to find a way to stream it live. So that's going to be pretty exciting too. But yeah.
Let's see. I just did a pool on one of these things and I got an Ulamog, which will never be cast. I got a Daybreak Coronet. So yeah, I might as well shoot myself in the face right now. A Horde of Notions, a Swans.
Those are bomb rares.
Inconsorable Tide or whatever that
inexorable yep.
Tide. Yeah. And Surikar Spellblade.
Huh.
I got two Vapor Snags in that deck and that's a Mandrake. So yeah, there's might be something there. Double Narcolepsy also.
Hey.
The blue's just insane-o.
Super deep.
Because it's got Cloud Elemental and
damn.
A Helium Squirter and two Somber Hoverguards, so maybe there's some artifacts to make my life better, and it's Agony Warp and Dismember.
Damn.
A triple Bloodthirst Bat, so maybe there's like a blue-black deck.
Sounds
I can play Swans
good.
With it.
Yeah, and the Swans are a bomb.
Oh, I got a Darksteel Axe. Can't go wrong with Axe.
Classic 23rd card.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited. We'll have a good day with that, and then I'll run it back. Once it hits the stream, I'll run it back for a bit on that. See how that all goes. So that's going to be pretty sweet. So, KYT, I know that this may be beneath you at this point, oh benevolent overlord, but so there's been some new limited PPTQs that have entered into our environment.
Okay.
I know one of them, for example.
I know what you're talking about.
So I know one of them, for example, is at Gamekeeper.
Oh.
And I know the Gamekeeper is doing a Modern Masters sealed GPT for $60 entry fee.
Okay.
Is that the right? Is it $60 or $75?
Wow, that's insane.
It's pretty good, right? Considering like top eight has to draft as well, right? So like that's not bad.
Yeah, I'm just realizing, wow. Like these entry fees are pretty crazy regardless.
But 60's good for that many packs and to have prizes after it.
Yeah.
Although I don't know what your guys' prize support is like, but still, that's a pretty good entry fee for a tournament like that. Like all the side events in Vegas are going to be around that price. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty ballin'. Just like for someone who doesn't have a perspective of what we're like the packs, the value of the packs we're getting, etc. It's like wow, I'm playing like $100 Magic tournament, children's card game. This is pretty high stakes. If you
well, it's interesting that you say that it's going to be $100. Because there actually is one that got posted at Harry T. North, and it is a PTQ for, yeah, there it is. It is a PPTQ for the first Pro Tour in 2016. It is a limited PPTQ, and it is Modern Masters 2015 sealed deck with top eight Modern Masters 2 draft.
Wow.
Okay. It is $110 entry fee.
Wow. I'm interested to see how if that impacts attendance at all.
So so they're expecting
that impacts attendance at all.
So I mean,
kids beg their parents for these things.
Listen, you know? It has actually turned into quite the schmozzle fest. Most of the Toronto locals have been like severely up in arms about this. The PPTQ is capped at 64 players.
Wow.
Okay. They're guaranteeing first prize is the invite, and that's it. Second prize is 12 boosters of Modern Masters 2. Third and fourth get 6 boosters of Modern Masters 2. Fifth through eighth get 2 boosters of Modern Masters 2 each. And for each player above 32, they'll add 2 boosters of Modern Masters 2 to the total prize.
If you top 8, you get your money back.
No.
Do you even?
No. Two boosters? Not two boxes. Two boosters.
No, I mean, I know, but you've gotten 6 plus 3 plus 2 is 11. So you've probably gotten your money back.
Okay. So if you really want to be extra baller / lazy, for an additional $10, they'll pre-reg your pool for you and give you an Ultimate Guard deck case.
Woo! I can see why they're up and on. Like, I hate, I don't think when you top 8, you should be breaking even. So, but that's my opinion. And so that seems wrong. Does that seem wrong to you or no?
I think that seems very wrong. But no, I've always played in like the store that I play at, like Warp, they don't make money off of their events. Like, they do events that are going to be like, always like, they do events at cost. So prizing has always been good. Warp has definitely gone to the everybody wins type of prizing. So you don't get a ton of prizes for winning, but like everybody gets something for coming out. This here is just like the price is like up the through the roof. And it's like they're trying to like price. Like, I understand you got to like compensate the judges and stuff like that.
But yeah.
At the same time, it's like, really? Like, that's a lot of money.
So a lot of people are really, really up in arms. Like I said, I mean, it's very much just... So like Card to Magicka, for example, is doing their Modern Masters 2 sealed PTQ for $60. There's one being done as well for $75 locally.
Well, $60 is an insane deal. $60
is an insane deal. Yeah, $75 is even reasonable. Like,
yeah. Right? That's the good price. $75 I would pay and not feel bad.
Yeah. So
$60 is downright insane.
So Leon posts something on the Facebook event page. And he's saying, Seth's doing exactly what I asked him to do, which is format the event so as to be equivalent to selling the sealed product at MSRP for a turnout of 32 people and raise the prices proportionally for a greater turnout. Okay? So his math is such that using $10 per pack figure, recall that this is Canada and it costs $12 Canadian for a $10 US. Recall that sales tax is a portion of the amount, so $12 equals $13.56, and $110 is really $97.34 plus HST. So they're charging $110 for 81.36 worth of Modern Masters 2 for the basic sealed. Difference goes towards top 8 draft, additional prizes, judges, and other expenses, electricity, paper, ink, etc., blah, 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 store maker, store owner. So 32 players paying an additional $28.64. We get $916.48, of which $325.44 is the packs for the top 8 draft. And $433.92 is for the 32 packs of additional prizes. It leaves $172 to pay the rest. Given there's more than one judge working a long day, you know, blah, 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 blah. So the interesting piece here, okay, is that you have to consider a couple things. Number one is that stores don't get product at MSRP, right? So number one.
Yeah.
Number two is, and I guess this is where the ethics piece comes in, or whether it's like principle or however you want to word this. But like when in having a discussion with Face Toronto, you don't throw these events to make money.
No, you throw these events to sell cards, to get people in your store.
Yeah.
To build up loyalty.
Yeah.
Like, to sell you cards, don't make money off of this when they sell the cards.
Or even to buy the cards after the idiots open them.
Yes, yes, absolutely. To be the first person to get shots at these cards.
Yes, yeah. I laugh, but it's
we have a good chunk of those guys.
Yeah. So
like that's when you see a vendor at a GP, they're not there to sell you cards.
Dude,
they're there to buy cards.
The first time I sat down with Sal and I'm like, so how's it going? And this was like GP Toronto like 2010. And I'm like, so how's it going? He's like, well, I hate to say this, but we're gonna leave with more money than we came with. And he says, and that's fucking terrible. Because their goal is to just go and spend all their money.
Yeah.
And if they break even on in terms of like cash, like if they come home with no extra money in their hands, then they've done well.
Yeah, they're happy with that.
Right? Whereas like there's events where he comes home and he's like, he has money and he's like, well, it wasn't good enough, you know? So I don't know. Like it feels like I understand from the store owner's perspective that Leon's just trying to run the event at like as close to cost neutral as possible.
Yeah, I totally understand it.
But like, it's not actually cost neutral. It's like the profitable cost. Because he is this is selling stuff at MSRP, not selling stuff at what you could.
Yeah.
So.
Like he's literally trying to. Yeah, he just wants to sell the product quick.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's caused quite an uproar amongst some of the, you know, more regular grinders, like our good buddy Andy Peters and, you know, Fournier and stuff have been pretty up in arms. Like, Andy to the point to say, this is the most outrageous PPTQ I've ever seen, $110. Selling a seat to the RPTQ is pretty twisted. I say selling because the price is steep and will deter a lot of people except those willing to buy the slot from you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That was about, like...
I think that's a little overboard because... it might actually be selling the seat because I can't imagine them hitting their 64 cap.
I don't think so either.
Like, that's one of those tournaments where it's like, if you do go to this, if you're listening to the show and you decide that you absolutely have to go to this tournament and you want to spend $110, do me a favor, don't buy anything. Don't buy anything at the store. Because that's the way the tournaments are supposed to happen. The tournaments are supposed to happen that the tournaments are a service to get you into the store, and then you do all the stuff in the store. So if they're going to try and take the money out of your pocket on the front side, don't give them any more on the back side.
Yeah.
Don't sell them your cards. Go to a different store. Someone who's going to run a tournament for you that's a community building tournament, not a community milking tournament.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the exciting piece that's happened this week. The interesting one that I saw. I actually finished The Strand this week.
What's The Strand?
The Strand is a TV show that was played on FX.
Okay.
And it was pretty good. It's basically about vampires, but it's like from the disease perspective of vampires.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so vampirism is a disease.
It's pretty good. It was pretty good. I was actually fairly impressed by it. Yeah, I was concerned for a while that it was not going to be good, and it turns out that it's quite good. Actually, I was very, very impressed. So, if the season 2 is coming out soon, and I'm very excited.
Yeah. See, I don't have a lot of time to watch TV these days. Like, I watch. Like, 3 shows, maybe? Like, I'm only, like, 6 episodes into Daredevil.
Yeah, somehow Jay doesn't like it.
Jay has...
Somehow Jay doesn't like... Oh, my goodness.
Jay has the attention span of a gnat. I love the man to death. But the man, like... If the TV show isn't basically, like, splaying tits or boobs... Like, tits or fucking explosions or gunshots or, you know... Actually solid comedy across, you know, on a consistent basis, he's not in. So, truth is what it is.
Truth hurts.
Truth hurts, baby.
Hurts.
So, yeah. I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's been pretty good. I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because the show actually got better, which is nice.
Good.
It was terrible bad, but it got better.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, the season finale, because the season finale just happened, and they, you know, like, with a season finale, you're supposed to do something to kind of tempt the person. You want to make them wanting more. You want to make sure that they tune in when the show starts back up.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did way too many things. Like, they said, well, you know, romance seems to be good to, you know, get the ladies back. So let's throw some romantic things in there. So they literally just paired everybody up with somebody. So everyone's got a romantic subplot going on, which I think my wife is. But it's just like, why did we need this? Like, why do all of a sudden, like, they had all these, like, little romantic subplots that would come up for a few episodes and then disappear. Or something would happen and it would be dead. Well, just, like, all of them are being revived. So that's one thing.
They kind of wrapped up their storyline, which is nice because it introduces something that's supposed to be a Phase 3 Marvel thing. Like, they introduced the Inhumans this season.
Yep.
So, you know, we're supposed to get a movie about that. So that's kind of cool. And what they did with that is interesting. And they set up for some stuff to happen next season with, like, some of the stuff that happened in this one, of course. But one of the things that they were doing that I thought was really interesting is that they're... they kind of end off with like this discussion of building like a secret Avengers, like a secret superpower team. Someone that like isn't in public knowledge and everything like that. And I thought that was really cool because the Captain America movie is going to be Civil War, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. always tries to really interject with like the Captain America movies and the Avengers movies. Like, it tries to make sure that it's plugging along with those.
Yep.
So it really feels like if anyone knows what like the Civil War storyline is, it pretty much comes out of like a tragedy that like some masked people trying to, I think it was like a school is being held hostage or something like that. And a powered person tries to go in and saves the day and ends up killing everybody, like flattens the school and kills all the kids.
So it's actually, so you're real close, close. So there is a superhero conflict or like a superhero supervillain conflict that's happening. And one of the supervillains actually ends up blowing up the school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, everyone gets really upset.
But it was like, but it was funny because it was some combination of the superheroes, like one of the superheroes interfering with the supervillain. Like, it was like this thing. So, yeah, and anyways, the superhero ended up getting the blame, is how it all came down. And that superhero happened to be Speedball at the moment of the New Warriors. Anyways, carry on.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's really interesting because, like, one of the, like, minor stories that was in this season is them really kind of pressing on they put everybody, like, how they register all the powered people, how S.H.I.E.L.D. has this registry that they call the... I can't remember what it is, whatever. But, yeah, they have a list, essentially, and they keep track of everybody on it. And they're really kind of showing how they're moving into that whole aspect. I think it's really setting itself up really well for Civil War. I think that's what next season is going to be, or at least the first half of next season is going to be kind of like a big Civil War lead up. So really excited for that. I kind of enjoy that show. Trying to watch Daredevil. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is like the only other show that we watch.
The show's really good.
Yeah, it's funny because like the way that we really have our TV set up is like we have a show that we watch when we have like extra time, like when we actually have sit down time, which is Daredevil. So to put it in perspective, since Daredevil's come out, we've had 5 hours of free time. Because we've watched 5 episodes. Then we have like our S.H.I.E.L.D. show that we'll watch once a week. Like, we have a time set aside for that. And then if we decide to be really, really bad parents and decide to watch TV while we're eating dinner, we watch something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Sure.
So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's my TV. I know other people get to watch a lot more TV, and I'm envious, but you guys suck. KYT, do you watch TV?
Very low amount. I just go through because of lack of time, I just go through these bin watching sessions when I do have the time. Like I basically rip through Daredevil really fast, and you know, I still haven't seen, like, you know, I'm probably in the very small minority, but I haven't seen a single episode of Game of Thrones, for example.
Oh, and my God.
I've watched one.
And it's just one of those things. Yeah, it's just one of those things when I have, like, let's say another holiday, long holiday like this, and I'll just binge watch, like, the whole thing, like I did for Daredevil, like I did for many seasons of 24. So that's where I'm at. I haven't seen a lot of things. So, but when some people just like hype shit up and it's easy to access, like Netflix, then I'll sit down and make the time to go through that stuff. But I got to see two recent movies. Saw Avengers 2 actually today with my girlfriend, and I saw Mad Max with a bunch of friends last night, and that was pretty sick as well. Having not seen any of the previous Mad Maxes, that was just like an insane movie. Reminds me of a lot of these like, I haven't seen a movie like this where it's just like pure action from beginning to end, and where there's sometimes like ridiculous, like, I don't know how to describe it, like where, you know, a guy's face gets ripped off or something, like some type of shit like that where you're just like, oh, without it being too disgusting. I don't know what other movie, I'm trying to think of another movie that gives me that type of feeling, but I can't think of one. Like, maybe, no, I don't think Tarantino's movie gave me that feeling that much. But yeah, Mad Max, highly recommend that. And I was actually disappointed by Avengers 2. I don't know about you, Dad. I forgot what you said about the, how you felt. I enjoyed it. It just, obviously, and usually I'm fine with watching sequels, etc. But I was slightly let down.
I feel like it was fine. It was one of those movies where I would never pay to watch it again. But like, if it's on TV or whatever, I'll watch it.
And there's a lot of shit I don't even understand.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't even know the purpose of this Vision. Well, he's not even called Vision in the movie, but this Vision character.
Well, Vision's important because he's like a mainstay in the comics. He's like one of the primary Avengers.
But is he supposed to be like super powerful because he has a stone in his head or not? Like, he didn't appear to be like major badass powerful.
Sure. So the stone's an addition, right? That is obviously just sort of being placed a foreshadow for, you know, the Infinity War that they're going to put in. But, like, Vision is pretty powerful. I mean, he's got like a computer for a brain, so he's super intelligent. So his strategy and everything else is, you know, top notch. And he has the ability to alter his molecular density at will.
Yes.
So that's actually really important because he can become, you know, like super durable or super tough or whatever, or he can just, you know, pass through people or, you know, as he's apt to do in combat, pass through people and then harden up so as to, you know, cause them organic significant pain or just like demolish, you know, inorganics. So it's interesting. And I think he's fine. Plus, because he's an android by nature, I think he's got like a natural affinity for interacting with computers and such.
I think my confusion was like, how was like the relative power difference? Like, how powerful was he supposed to be relative to Ultron? And how powerful Ultron was supposed to be versus like some of the Avengers? Because at some point you see like Ultron like being able to sort of, he had to get shot at by both Vision, Iron Man, and Thor, I think, at the same time or something to be able to keep him at bay. So I was like a bit confused.
So at some point in time, didn't he say like during the final battles, like somebody made a comment that he got like an upgrade or whatever? And yeah, or he got some new suits. Yeah, it's because he got vibranium armor.
So, oh, okay. Now, okay.
Right? So Cap's shield is actually made of a vibranium adamantium hybrid.
Right.
Which means, so that's why it's like so indestructible, supposedly. I mean, if any of you that are not like absurd comic geeks, but like just Wolverine
just claims people will fix it in there.
Well, yeah, Wolverine is his skeleton and claws and stuff were made of adamantium, which is like supposed to be the strongest and most indestructible metal on Earth, right?
Right.
But when you couple that with vibranium and you create the unique alloy that was Captain America's shield, it not only, so vibranium is by nature designed to be able to absorb all manner of energy.
Okay.
So I get kinetic that energy or whatever. So when you combine that with the adamantium in it to just kind of like give it that additional durability level, like it literally becomes the single most indestructible thing on the planet. There's been, I think, only like three occasions in the comic books where, you know, Captain America's shield was actually destroyed or broken or cracked or whatever. And like one of them was a dream and one of them was by Thanos' hand with the full Infinity Gauntlet, which is basically like, imagine a god doing it. And so, like, it is what it is, right? But yeah, so, yeah, Vision is, he's one of the more powerful guys, but I guess at the same time, he kind of, like, he was definitely over-exaggerated, I think, a little bit in this one. And it definitely makes a lot of sense that he ended up, that Ultron was, like, significantly more powerful in the last battle. Like getting the vibranium updated.
Yeah, one on one, Iron Man versus Vision. Who would win?
Vision would kill him.
Vision. Yeah.
Because he'd like just like be 100% intangible and then just pop up behind him and like, zzz, you're dead. Like, put my hand around your heart, you're dead. Right?
Like you have to look like towards, you know, without the whole spoiler thing, I don't know, whatever. But if you look towards the end of the show, like, you see, like, there's the different people who are kind of kicking around and stuff like that. And each person kind of replaced a different person. So, like, you have, like, your hyper character that Vision takes over for. You have, you know, like, all these types of things. So, I wish I could get into it without, like, really ruining it for people who haven't watched it. So it's just, it's a way that they could, like, get a guy in and he's got a fresh contract. And, you know, it's like a hockey team. It's like, oh, I need that big shot from the point, but this guy's contract's going to end. Let's bring this guy in and get him for a new contract. And we'll try and extend the other guy, but if we don't, then we're good.
Yeah.
You know, so that they can save these guys on certain movies and stuff like that. Because you got these people who are doing, like, double, triple duty and stuff like that. Like, the Civil War movie is going to have everybody except for, I think they said, like, Hulk and Thor in it. So,
and then plus additions, like Spider-Man will be in it
for contract reasons, or
no, Thor. So maybe, Thor's movie actually takes place like on Asgard.
Yeah.
So Thor is actually like away for a while, and that's why he's not part of Civil War.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Hulk just never was a part of Civil War.
No.
So I don't know.
But everybody else is.
Yep.
Sweet. The only other thought I had while watching movies, I've always had these thoughts. I always thought that in that world, like, someone like Flash or in DC World or Quicksilver is just, like, too powerful. If, like, couldn't they just stab anyone in the back and kill them?
Like, well, sure, but, like, so I guess it comes down to how powerful is a knife?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's ultimately what it comes down to, because, yeah, you're right, but like, what's a knife going to do against Iron Man? Like, nothing?
Well, it's Hawkeye having, like, the best line in the movie of, like, when he's, like, talking to, like, Scarlet Witch, and he's like, I'm fighting robots with a bow and arrow. None of it makes sense, but I get out there and I do it because I have to do my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's super important, right? I mean, like, and I think that I think the movie was fine. I agree with you that there were a lot of things that could have been more well, like, much done a lot better, I think, but for the most part, it's okay.
Yeah, I still look forward to, I still enjoyed myself and look forward to the other stuff.
Yeah, so this week, of course, was the end of, was the Arrow season finale. So Arrow, if you're into superheroes and you're not watching Flash and Arrow, then you're actually doing yourself a huge disservice. Because
somebody said Flash was good, but Arrow's terrible now.
See, what's hilarious is at the start, Arrow is insane, and for the first four episodes, Flash was terrible.
Okay.
But, you know, they all...
I don't watch either of them, but...
Yeah. They all ended up finding their stride, and now, like, I quite enjoy both of them. Like, they're both really good. It may just be that I'm too deep in Arrow that I just, like, I need to watch it. But I'm really enjoying The Flash right now. It's been very good. So that season finale happens this week. So, like, tomorrow. So I'll be looking forward to that. And yeah, like, so the wife and I do watch a lot of TV. It's one of the few ways that we do get to, like, actually unwind together. And what's great is, like, we PVR a lot of stuff. And so if we get behind on a lot of shows, then, you know, we're able to kind of catch up. And since TV is basically, like, non-existent in the summer, then that's sort of the time that we used to, like, catch up on our PBR stuff. But yeah, I don't actually watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I don't watch Gotham. And as I understand it, those are two that are very good that I should be watching.
Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was, like, terrible for about six episodes,
maybe
more. And
that was the
more.
Problem. I caught two and I was just like, fuck this.
Yeah, it gets better right towards, like, the end of the first season.
Yeah.
And then, when it leads into, like, Winter Soldier, it did a really good job of that.
Sure.
And then the second season kind of got a little stupid, but then it got better. And it's just been rolling pretty much since the mid-season hiatus. Like, the whole second half of this season was just solid.
Good.
Aside from, like, the last episode where it was just, like, the last 20 minutes of it was just, really? Do we need to do all this bullshit?
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, they probably were recording it when they had no idea if they were going to have another show. Agent Carter was cool. It was neat.
Yep.
It was really short, so they had to push the story along quickly, which was kind of the big thing for it, I think. Because that's the tough part, is that you get these guys who are like, okay, this is a great story. And then like, oh, we have 20-some-odd episodes. Well, shit. That's a lot of episodes. How are we going to fill it? So they just sprinkle story here and there and a lot of filler bullshit. And that's gotcha. Just... Yeah.
Huh.
Fuck, we're a good Magic podcast.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah. I actually wanted to pick your brains on Modern quickly, because okay. I'm looking at the mock's results and like the top two decks. Well, the Pro Tour champion Antonio Del Moral Leon finished in top four with Splinter Twin. I don't know. I only watched 20 minutes of the mocks just because of Kenji. I just wanted to check him out and see his first time out as a commentator. But I'm seeing like the top four is Splinter Twin Burn, followed by two company decks. And is it truly completely taking over? Is like the number one deck, at least according to the SCG, thing I'm seeing is Elf Company that won the mocks, or the did well the best in the Modern portion?
Well, let's take a quick look here. Yeah, so Elf Company, well, so Lanto won the event, which is why he's okay. in the first place, right?
Okay.
So Elf Company and Malira Company are sort of the two decks that have been bursting onto the scene in terms of Modern.
Yep. They're decks that really abuse the fact that control is non-existent right now. But the second that people start playing more control, like if you see people start to tilt back towards like Twin, and like if Sean McLaren decides to like go and make a splash and starts playing like Red, White, Blue or something like that, I think that the deck just goes to shit. Because it's Court of Calling, like as much as it's an instant and it can be played like aggressively against control decks,
negate,
at the same time, like
dispel.
Yeah, it just and it's so inconsistent. Like I was just like watching Sean play, and he's playing against a Collected Company deck, and the guy cast Collected Company 7 times in the match, and he got 9 creatures, and most of them were just like mana dorks or like no power type things. Like it was just they were really, really, really underperforming in that match. So. Yeah, he was playing against the Malira Coco deck, so.
Yeah, the spell sounds insane, Scott.
So, you know what, actually, and I'm going to fucking eat so much shit for saying this. Do you know what the most terrifying two-card combination is in Modern right now?
What?
Fulminator Mage and Koligon's Command.
Yeah, it seems really unfair.
So, Willie's been playing Jund. Todd Anderson played Jund at the Premier IQ in Dallas-Fort Worth, came in 11th. And,
man.
Yeah, so Jund is on the comeback. Jason Clark played Jund. Is that my Jason Clark? He didn't go down to Dallas-Fort Worth. This must be someone else. That's hilarious. Anyways.
There's another J. Is he better? Could you trade yours?
I don't know. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, like Eddie Leza came in. His deck is not good. Okay, so realistically, like Jund is a deck that's up and coming. Curly ended up top 8-ing and then coming in second place on Sunday. So he actually had a couple of them back and forth. Let me see if I can quickly click on this. So his Jund deck played 3 Abrupt Decay, 1 Dismember, 2 Command, 4 Bolt with 3 Bob, 3 Finks, 3 Ooze, 4 Goyf. Along with like 4 Inquisition, 3 Thoughtseize, and 2 Pulse. Along with how many man lands? 2 Ravines, 2 Treetop Villages. Now, 4 Liliana Vale obviously rounds out the Planeswalker package, and then 2 more copies of Koligon's Command and 3 copies of Fulminator Mage in the sideboard. So against like blue, white, red, you basically become fucking Bomberman and kill your opponent. It is terrible. Discard a card, kill a land. Discard a card, kill a land. Super.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I thought most degenerates would like that. Plus, you get to play like Feed the Clan to beat the red decks, and you get to play Knight of Souls Betrayal to beat Infect and Infinity. Like, I don't know, but this seems pretty good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I would like knowing your hit rate with these types of decks. Like, I would snap try to get back in the format with Jund. Or the Grixis Twin Deck. The Grixis Twin Deck is very popular. Very much like Roland Hinojosa's deck, which came first at Dallas Fort Worth.
Yeah, I saw someone playing something similar to that, like where it's just like red blue twin, but they just have Tasigurus in there because if the game goes long, then that card just wins.
Also, they are playing like copies of where are you? Oh, not in this deck. So there's also Grixis Delver list that does a lot of the same stuff, and it's like Delver, Secret, Snapcaster Mages, Young Pyromancer, and Tazigur. Just because like Tazigur is this one mana threat that, you know, you just like snap, resolve it, and you do a lot of crazy shit with it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting
is
the
fact that that deck can play Terminate is just like gross.
Yeah. And some versions even get so greedy as to play Blood Moon, believe it or not.
Ooh.
That's impressive. Most of them are the Delver deck versions, but it's still pretty gross. Now, Dan Jessup came in third, okay, with Grixis Control, okay?
Oh my god, I'm so hot about this.
Are you hot about this deck? Okay.
Yeah, link me.
Okay, so there are...
Actually, just tell me about it. I want the rise to go slowly.
Okay, creature base. One Spellskite, one Grim Lavamancer.
Okay.
Four Snapcaster Mage.
Okay.
Three Tazigur the Golden Fang.
Ooh.
23 lands.
Okay.
Six islands.
That's awesome. Okay.
One mountain, one swamp.
Okay.
One blood crypt. Two steam vents, one watery grave.
Okay.
Four delta, three tarn, two mire.
Okay.
One bluffs, one lighthouse.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spells. Four Thoughtseize.
Okay.
Four Lightning Bolt.
Okay.
Four Serum Visions.
Okay.
Three Spell Snare.
Okay. What's... okay, yeah.
Two Kolaghan's Command.
Okay.
Two Mana Leak.
Mm-hmm.
One Reband. One Roast.
Uh-huh.
One Go for the Throat.
Okay.
Two Cryptic Command.
Yeah.
And two each of Blood Moon and Vidalcan Shackles.
Well, that makes sense, because I was wondering, like, why is the mana base, like, so sketchy?
And that's why. It's because it supports both Shackles and Blood Moon. The average casting cost in this deck is, like, 2.1.
Yeah.
Sideboard's pretty hot. Like, one Jace Architect of Thought, one Ashiok, one Karanos, one Click, another Blood Moon, two Dispel, two Spellskite, that would mix three total. One is Staticcaster, one Rending Volley, one Vandal Blast, three Anger of the Gods.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting deck. Very interesting. So
it's like Blue Moon instead just going Max Tasigur.
Yep. Yeah, and with discard.
Yeah, with this card.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's a sweet deck, but like I would 100% start with Jund for you for sure. Like for sure.
Yeah. Wow. I guess the black red command is being played everywhere.
Yeah, it is. So I just bought like eight of them also this weekend. I bought eight Wingman Rocks and I bought eight Kolaghan commands. That's what I did this weekend.
Let's see, Kolaghan Command, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If I bought them at $2, I'm doing okay.
Well, I should get some foil ones if it's going to be
a modern thing, yeah.
A thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Kolaghan's Command. Let's see what the fine folks of Face-to-Face say.
Star City says 8.
$10 for pre-release promo ones.
So, anyways, that's what's up.
That is what's up. I'm going to see if eBay has foil Korean ones.
That's a good idea.
I have not looked for Korean foils in a late little bit here. Let's see. But it is my most recent eBay search, so. Oh, geez. Foil Korean Abrupt Decay for a $1 bid with 7 days left. Yeah, okay, that's about right. buy it now for a foil Korean Snapcaster Mage. Just a cool $1,800.
give or take.
Yeah. Cool is the most important word there.
Yeah.
1,000 Korean foil cards collection, 200 rare.
Sweet.
Yeah, I agree. Well. Well. Well.
Deep subject.
Well.
Will that do it for this week?
I don't know. Will it?
Do you have anything else? I think so. I think we're good.
I'm calling it an episode.
Okay, well, what did you... KYT, do you have anything important to say?
Yes, he asked about Modern.
Yeah, I've said... I've hit my quota, so I'm good.
Oh, fuck. Is there anything in the comments we wanted to touch on?
I was just... you know what? I mean, I think... I hope that my comments said a lot. I'm just really glad that everybody sort of got involved with discussion. And it's a really strong testament to our fans and fan base that... people that got engaged in discussions were respectful and not just like straight ass lickers. And that is really, really important to me, I think. And it just sort of continues to go and prove that our fans are just the best ever. So we love you all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. I was afraid that the message was going to be missed. That the target, like it's such an easy topic for people to lose track of what the actual concern was in the first place, so I'm really happy that, you know, we kind of ended up where we were, so without getting into it too much. I love you guys. You've done so good.
All right, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I guess we'll call it a wrap.
All right,
so we'll see you all next week. Jay will be back. We very likely will also be talking our Modern Masters 2 release weekends. I think that we may even have an old favorite on the show. I think Jay has coordinated another guest for us, so we'll see how that all goes.
Yeah, I saw some of that. That looked interesting.
I agree. It will be interesting.
Yeah.
Get my ashtray out. Actually, I'm going to have a lot of...
exactly.
I'm going to have a lot of questions for him, actually. That's going to be really good, since I'm going to be up in his neck of the woods shortly after that show. That's going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got to get, like, the disco going.
God, I got to see where he lives. It might, you know what? I might even meet him for a beer. That could be hilarious. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, maybe. You should find out.
I'm going to.
Everything over there is, like, really close together. Like, you just jump on a train and you're
I
there.
Hope so.
Like, that's the way.
So y'all
Since you're not coming to Vegas. Maybe he's coming to Vegas.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck you, McCallum.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. See y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
I love you.